They're gonna clean up your looks with all the lies in the books to make a citizen out of you. Because they sleep with a gun and keep an eye on you, son, so they can watch all the things you do. Because the drugs never work, they're gonna give you a smirk, 'cause they got methods of keeping you clean. They're gonna rip up your heads, your aspirations to shreds. Another cog in the murder machine. They say love, say they just scare the living shit out of me. They could care less as long as someone will bleed. So talk in your clothes, I'll strike a violent pose. Maybe it'll lead you alone, but not me.
Joey was 19 and, well, 19. We instant messaged for 2 hours when I should have been outside enjoying the summer days. I was mostly unemployed. The show I was stage managing wasn't up yet, and the show I was acting in wasn't into heavy rehearsals yet. The conversation, like all the instant message conversations I had that month, meandered around how horny he was. Unlike the rest of the conversations I had that month, Joey already had a boyfriend, so he didn't need me to unhorny him. We agreed to meet anyway. As friends. I took a quick shower in case I still smelled like Bobby Doodah's sweat, and once I was dressed and ready, I checked my email for better offers and headed over to Joey's. Joey was cutiful, a little more than cute, not quite beautiful. He was about 5'6", with brown hair that was almost gray. He showed me around his house while his father snoozed in the living room. It was a nice house. Kitchen, 3 bedrooms, living room, dining room, front porch, pool in the backyard, typical Cranberry Lake house. The best room in the house, he said in case I didn't know where he was leading me to, is my bedroom. This is where I tuned out his boyfriend's name and I sleep. Wait, your boyfriend lives with you? Yeah, he shrugged. Your boyfriend lives with you, and you invited me over to hang out in your bedroom while your boyfriend, who lives with you, isn't home? I asked.
Well, my parents don't know he's my boyfriend.
Do your parents know you're gay? He shook his head.
No.
But they know that you sleep in a room with another boy. A room with only one bed.
Yeah, they're really not too bright.
Apparently, his father was sleeping ugly, snoozing his life away in the living room. I wondered if he secretly knew that his son was a fairy prince. Joey showed me a picture of his boyfriend, whose name wasn't important enough for me to remember. He was cute, but older. Of course, I was older too, but his boyfriend with the unremarkable name looked a few years older than I. He was 28. No parents were this dumb. I had a feeling they weren't the ones who dropped out of high school to get their GEDs. I tried to get off the subject of his boyfriend, primarily because I was trying to get off. I don't know what we started talking about. I know that we were only talking about 10 minutes before we started discussing what kind of cock we liked. At that point in my life, I had only ever been with circumcised guys, and I was circumcised myself. Joey had only been with non-circumcised guys and was non-circumcised himself.
I wonder if they taste different,
he asked uninnocently. There's only one way to find out. I hope whoever coined the phrase, "there's only one way to find out," died long suffering from a debilitating disease. Is there really only one way to find out whether a friend has syphilis? No. You don't have to fuck them to find out. You can ask them. Or if you're too shy, ask someone who slept with them. You could even spy on them in the shower and see if they exhibit any symptoms. Wondering if your mother's having an affair? You don't have to sit in the closet and wait for her and the postman to make a delivery to the dead letter office. You don't even have to set up a camera in their room. You could just ask her. Or put a sleazy ad on Craigslist.org, or tell your father you heard her and his best friend jumping on the bed together while he was at work. There are always several methods to discover things. Yet, I found myself in Joey's bedroom talking about the taste of cock, saying, "There's only one way to find out." Ugh. I don't remember what his cock tasted like, except that it probably tasted more or less like cock. This was after I discovered the taste of Altoids, but before I discovered when they could really be useful, so all cock tasted pretty much like cock. There was nothing particularly interesting about sex with Joey. This is not a condemnation of him, merely a sad commentary on how much sex I'd been having with assorted people that month. Were we to have met at any other month in my life, I probably would have been able to regale you with more details about what we did in his and his boyfriend's bedroom. As it was, I don't even remember what happened after we blew each other. Somehow I ended up back at home, back online, looking for something more satisfying.
They're gonna ruin your looks with all the lies in the book. They'll make a pill popper out of you. You've got to sleep with a gun and keep an eye on them, son. You've got to watch all the things they do.
Apart from the occasional tourist looking for a more enjoyable vacation, Cranberry Lake MFRAM was mostly filled with the same desperate whores every day. Not that I was a desperate whore or anything. I'm just saying. There was Tommy as a whore, Random Provincetown Slut, Always on E-Boy, and Vinny the Stylist. They were like a background image. I always noticed them, but rarely engaged them in conversation. I'd never met up with Vinny the Stylist. Even via America Online, I sort of sensed there was something not quite right about him. We never instant message, but he would often scroll his sexual frustrations throughout the chat room, and who wants to fuck a whiny AOL scroll monster? One day, I was IMing with Always on E-Boy when I got a deluge of IMs from people in the chat room. I answered them all with the appropriate responses. Most quickly got X'd out and forgotten, but one of the conversations seemed to be going pretty well. I was being my usually charming, hysterical self, and he was finding me amusing. We were several minutes into the conversation when I noticed it was Vinny the Stylist. Sometimes your first impressions of people are wrong, so I decided not to begrudge his scrolling habits and continued the conversation. He seemed really sweet. After about a half an hour, he suggested we meet at a local hotel for drinks. We wouldn't hook up that day, but we'd hang out and see what happened. He didn't have a pic to send me, so I declined to send him my own. I got to the hotel about 15 minutes early. I ordered myself an amaretto sour and watched golf on the hotel lounge's obscenely large television. About 5 minutes later, an incredibly disheveled and, not in a cute way, wild-haired, junky-looking guy shuffled in. He looked the way William S. Burroughs should have looked when he was about 40. I had a disturbing feeling that this was Vinny the Stylist. He sat down and ordered a Bud. The bartender flat out refused to serve him. For the first time in my life, I became completely engrossed in the PGA on ABC. The person I assumed to be Vinny ordered a Coke. The bartender gave it to him. Reluctantly. Vinny downed his Coke and got on his cell phone.
Hey, Ma? Yeah, I'm not going to be able to make it for dinner tonight. I got a date. I'm clean. Nah, I'm just a little nervous about my date, that's all.
He rubbed at his nose, which I noticed was crusted with blood. Birdie, par, drive, nice lie, to the pin, fairway, please don't let this be Vinny the Stylist, chip, water hazard, sploosh.
Hey,
he turned to me as he hung up his phone.
Are you Alan?
John Daly is in the rough. Sorry?
I'm Vinny. You're Alan, right?
No. Sorry.
Oh.
Tiger Woods. Greg Norman. From the tee. I watched golf for a half hour while Vinny preened, picked up, then returned his cell phone to his pocket, drank four or five more overpriced Cokes, then went to the bathroom. This was my opportunity. I paid for my one well-nursed drink and walked out to my car. As I climbed into my car, I heard Vinny call out,
Alan!
I was grateful I'd given him the wrong name. I closed the door, turned the key in the ignition, and pulled out of the parking lot. I was getting ready to turn onto the highway on-ramp when a Jeep swerved alongside me. Vinny was inside. He was shouting something at me that I couldn't make out. I turned onto the on-ramp. He cut off a tractor-trailer truck, nearly getting himself killed in order to follow me. Shit. Rather than try any fancy driving or speeding, I drove as if I wasn't being pursued by a coked-up online horror reject. He rode my ass, flashed his lights, beeped his horn, pulled alongside me, and made the roll-down-the-window pantomime that hasn't been technologically accurate for, like, 15 years. But since he didn't appear to have a gun, I obliged.
I know who you are! Pull over! Let's talk!
Go away! I rolled my window up. He swerved really quickly in front of me and slowed down. I fucking hate crazy people. I tried to get around him, but he kept swerving in front of me. The next exit was mine. I hoped that he would continue swerving in front of me so I could quickly veer off the highway and drive home. No such luck. He pulled out, then back in behind me and started riding my bumper again. There were very few times that I was pleased to live near a police station. This was one of them. I pulled into the parking lot. He did not follow me in. I sat in the lot, de-stressing for about 5 minutes. There was nowhere excepting people's driveways for Vinny to park and have a view of the police station. I pulled out, looking intently both ways. Nothing. I breathed. I took a right into my condo complex, no Vinny. I parked next to a massive SUV, I knew they were good for something, and trembled to my apartment. I decided this was a perfect time to end Whore Month. I signed on to my AOL screen name, went in stealth mode, and blocked Vinny the Stylist from instant messaging or emailing me, and signed off. Then, because I was more horny than enlightened, I signed in under a different screen name.
And when the morning arrives, you got that hope in your eyes, but they've got methods of keeping you crazed. There's the drugs and the rage, the weirdo friends that they make, the sex at an early age.
While most of the other people in the Cranberry Lake M4M room scrolled things like 38 masculine, brown, 5'4, 8 inches. I would check profiles and send deliberately horrible one-liners to guys I thought might be my type. I was an AOL lurker. I don't know what ridiculous thing I sent to Tommy as a whore, but it made him lol, which means laugh out loud, not lots of love, Mom. We talked for about 20 minutes before he relayed to me that he was horny. This was someone I could bond with, but not in that ropes and whips sort of way. He said he was saving up for a car, but was currently biking places. He said this as a way of telling me he was fit. Little did he know how low my standards were. He was still living with his parents in order to not pay rent and save up for some holy grail mobile. And he was not out to his parents, so he didn't want to meet at his house. While I didn't live too far from him, it was far enough that he didn't want to bike it. So we agreed to meet in a grocery store parking lot about halfway between our houses. I was meeting someone in a parking lot for sex. As Tommy did not have pictures online, I chose not to send him one of my own, so we gave each other descriptions. I didn't see anyone on a bike when I drove in, so I went into a bookstore and sat at a table by the window waiting. After about 10 minutes, I went back into the parking lot. The only person I saw with a bike was near the grocery store carriages, smoking cigarettes with the juvenile delinquent bag boys. I waited another 15 minutes, then headed home. I had been stood up for sex in a grocery store parking lot. So I went back home and resumed my online lurking. After about 5 minutes into it, I got a message from Tommy.
What happened?
I went to the grocery store, waited about a half an hour, didn't see you, so I came home.
Oh, were you the guy in the bookstore?
Yeah.
Yum. Sorry, I ran into some friends and had to smoke them out. I wasn't sure if you were you, so I didn't say anything. Want to try again?
Sure, I said. I was smitten by the fact that anyone said yum in reference to me. I don't think it's happened since. Back to the parking lot I went. Sure enough, one of the boys who'd been smoking by the carriages earlier sauntered over to my car. It was my turn to say yum. I did wonder what he was doing, hanging out with the Stop and Shop bag boys, but I was meeting a stranger for sex in a grocery store parking lot, so I didn't think I could take much of a high moral ground. We had a few good laughs over the brief car ride to my house. We had a lot in common, so much so that we decided to hang out and play Mystery Science Theater 3000 while watching TV for a while. At around 4 in the afternoon, Animaniacs came on, and we realized we both had a place of reverence for Wacko Warner and Pinky in the Brain. At some point in the episode, Pinky started to play with some sticks or something.
"This is getting me incredibly hard,"
Tommy said as he stood up and demonstrated. Due to the lack of visual barricades and multitude of noisy neighbors, we headed upstairs to my bedroom where Tommy turned the TV onto Animaniacs and began taking my pants off. I've mentally filed Pinky and the Brain under surprisingly gay pornography ever since, though neither of us actually spent any time watching the TV, I want to be clear on that. If Becky gave the world's worst blowjob, Tommy gave the world's best. The prelude to the blowjob was a sexy striptease that lasted about 30 seconds before he was naked and kneeling over me. He was all over the place. His tongue went from head to shaft to sack to belly button to shaft to sack to shaft to head. It was as if he was born with four tongues. I quickly reached the internalized orgasm phase where you use every iota of your sexual power not to be a victim of premature ejaculation. And when premature ejaculation is involved, everyone's a victim. He had pressed every button except the one in my ass where I carefully guided his finger bingo. After about 10 minutes, he took each nut into his mouth individually and began to hum. This was the only time I'd ever had a hummer. Mind wad-blowing doesn't even begin to describe it. I fought the wave and I won, barely. He kept looking up and smiling at me, then he'd go back to making me the happiest man to ever pick up another strange man in a parking lot. We'd been going about 20 minutes when I just couldn't take it anymore, so Tommy did. I feel like I could have lost 10 pounds in that orgasm. I didn't think it would ever stop. Tommy swallowed easily a half dozen times before I was through. Was really the only appropriate thing I could say. After a few full body spasms, I reached down to begin some well-deserved reciprocation, but he intercepted my hand.
"Mind if we go out for a smoke first?"
He could have asked me if I minded if we went out for a wine tasting at a sewage treatment plant, and I would have said, "No problem." We threw on some clothes and headed to my back porch. Tommy rolled himself a joint, and we passed it back and forth a few times. My next-door neighbor to the right was a really sweet grandmother. I used to visit with her every couple of days. Sometimes I'd make dinner for her, other times she'd come over to my house and listen to me play piano. When I used to work at a summer camp, she had her grandchildren attend it. They were great kids. Taylor was 9, Clayton was 12, and John was 16. I'm reasonably sure she knew what we were smoking when she leaned over the fence and said,
"Something smells good. Oh, how I miss being able to smoke my... Well, hello, Tommy!"
"Hey, Miss M. How are you?"
"I'm doing great. I didn't know you knew Adam."
"Yeah, we go, like, way back."
"Well, you have excellent taste in friends."
"Oh, and you're not at all biased because I spend so much time hanging out with Johnny."
"Not at all. Ta-ta, boys."
And she headed off her porch and over to the community pool. "Where do you know Miss M from?" I asked.
"Oh, Johnny and I were on the JV football squad together last year."
What? The warning signs. He lived with his parents. He rode his bike because he didn't have a car. He liked cartoons. He got my sense of humor. He was smoking pot with the bag boys at a grocery store. On their own, none of these things mean everything. But put all together, how did I not realize that I had picked up an underage boy in a grocery store parking lot? I mean, he looked over 18. His profile hadn't listed an age, but I assume... Fuck. I was now the poster boy for contributing to the delinquency of a minor. We'd smoked pot and he'd sucked my dick. I was going to prison. But first, I was going to take a long hit off the joint he rolled. I briefly pondered buying some off of him and offering him a beer just to cover the point spread.
"Want to go back inside?"
he asked. Yes, I wanted to go back inside with him, alter the timeline, and meet him when he was 18. If I couldn't do that, I wanted to go inside and freak out about the fact that he never told me he was jailbait and I wasn't intelligent enough to ask him how old he was. But I thought that might ruin the mood, so I asked, "How long have you known John?"
"Since we were, like, kids."
Right, when they were kids, as opposed to now that they were in high school together. I remembered something from an online argument in one of the chat rooms. A 16-year-old was talking about his 20-year-old fuck buddy, and when people harangued him about legal issues, he'd link them to a website about state laws. In our state, it was perfectly legal for someone under 22 to fuck around with someone over 16. I was under 22. "How old are you?"
17.
I did the legal happy dance in my head. Morally, I was still less than thrilled. I just couldn't picture myself driving a white van and hanging around tech school parking lots. I was too good for that. Only grocery store parking lots for me.
"My friends tell me I give great head."
"You're amazing," I said. "You should be teaching classes. You know, instead of attending them in a high school."
"I've always wanted to get fucked, but never, like, had the courage to ask anybody about it. It's why I decided to meet someone online today."
"Rut-row, Raggy." There were so many ways this could go horribly wrong. One, his parents could find out. Being absolutely terrified about his parents discovering his sexuality, he could lie and say he'd been seduced. Neither of us would ever be able to go out in public in Cranberry Lake again without facing some sort of ridicule. Two, his parents could find out, and he could be completely honest with them. And they could fuck up his life anyway. Three, Miss M could hear us through the thin walls if she hadn't already, and start telling everyone in the neighborhood and her family and his family and my family that I was fucking teenage boys. Goodbye any sort of political career, which is a moot point at this stage in my life, but at the time it was still a nearly improbable possibility. Four, he could suggest a threesome with Johnny, who I'd known since Johnny was 11. That would never happen. Johnny was cute and all, but he was Johnny. Just a kid. I couldn't be attracted to him any more than I could be attracted to his bugger. Five, no one would find out, and we'd end up having a secret relationship which would do wonders for us sexually, but distract him from his college applications. Six, we would end up in a relationship so wonderful that he would come out to his parents, introduce me, and then they would beat me to death with their collection of Gideon's Bibles. Seven, we would end up in a relationship so wonderful that he would come out to his parents, who would pretend to love me while secretly pouring arsenic into my cherry coke until I died. Eight, we would end up in a relationship so wonderful that he would come out to his parents, who would really love me and want to spend some time camping or something with my family, who would kill me when they found out I'd been fucking a 17-year-old boy. There were hundreds of variations on these thoughts involving angry mob justice, Jerry Springer, NAMBLA meetings, and various other things I never wanted to be a part of my autobiography if I ever became famous. But we connected on so many levels before I found out how old he was, and it wasn't as though he were 13 or mentally challenged or anything. He was a consenting, nearly adult. I was nearly kidding myself. I decided to make it a non-issue. We spent some time talking about how long he'd wanted to get fucked, why he wanted to get fucked, if he was sure it was a great idea to get fucked by some guy he just met on the internet, the fact that I really wanted to fuck him but really didn't want to fuck him up. I suggested we wait. He kissed me. That boy could do anything with his mouth. At this point, age was a moot point. I still wasn't going to fuck him until he'd really thought about it, but it was because I didn't want to see him make a mistake, not because he was 17. His hands went down to my zipper again. I took his hand and led him back upstairs.
What have I done? Am I the reason she's dumb? Will my overspending make her poor? Did my slutty ways spark her promiscuous face? Am I the reason that she's
Today's podcast was brought to you by white vans in grocery store parking lots. It's either a government surveillance van or a pedophile. Either way, do not make eye contact with the driver. For more information on this podcast and other writings, check out www.crookedtreehouse.com, or if you have nothing better to do with your life, you can email me at insafemode@gmail.com. For real though, try and find something better to do with your life. I'm a busy man.